On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. You have aligned to Republican Representative Tony Kurtz of Waniwak, a district in the southwestern part of our state. Here's a basic roadmap for our conversation. We'll discuss work on the 16-member Joint Finance Committee that he sits on, newly proposed legislation dubbed Corrine's Law that seeks regulation around the distribution of patient-specific medication. And we start with egg exports and a bill on the governor's desk that aims to expand the value of Wisconsin commodities. How can the state do better in helping local producers find international markets? It's 800-642-1234. Representative Tony Kurtz's district includes Mauston, New Lisbon, Reedsburg, and Richland Center. Representative Kurtz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me on, Kate, and good morning to all your listeners.
Good morning. And the egg exports legislation, let's start there. Passed the legislature on the governor's desk, commits $5 million to boost exports, 25%. How would it do that?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited, and I appreciate you bringing that up. This is something that we worked on last session and got it across the finish line this session. Basically, I want your listeners to understand Wisconsin agricultural products is about a $105 billion industry. And unfortunately, we only export about 3% of that. So roughly a $3 billion we export our agricultural products, everything from milk to whey to bovine genetics to cranberries to potatoes, you name it, our farmers make it. But yet we don't export that much. We're actually 17th when you look across the United States and the export state. So this bill is basically going to make a commitment from the state, the first time our state has ever actually invested money through DATCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, partnering with Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation to literally put money behind those agricultural commodities to try to boost those exports. And it's a five-year goal. And the goal at the end of those 5 years is to see if we have increased our exports, everything, once again, from dairy. Half the $5 million will go to dairy. 25% of that will go to $1.25 million will go to our meats and vegetables, and then other ones, our other commodities like cranberries, ginseng, et cetera. So the goal is increase our exports by 25% in 5 years. And I know some people say that's a lofty goal, but I think we need to have we need to set some goals, and I know the industries are definitely looking forward to it.
Looking at the data, Wisconsin exported nearly $3.4 billion last year in egg and food products to 145 countries. That's according to the state Ag Department data. Where should we be?
Well, you know, if you think about, we're 17th, like I mentioned earlier. I just personally think we can do better. And when I first learned about this, and let's be honest, this is something that the governor brought up last session. He had a special session on ag, and I was sitting there in the chamber, and he was talking about boosting our agricultural exports. His initial proposal was $1 million.
It was in his biennial budget.
Well, yes, and so we build on that because, once again, it was only just focusing on dairy, and to your listener's point, dairy is half. I mean, dairy is a little less than half. It's like $405, $406 billion in dairy. But we have so many other commodities, you know, when you deal with beef and pork and vegetables and the whole gamut. So we don't want to just focus on dairy. Obviously, that's our biggest thing, and we're the dairy state. But we want to look at all the commodities across the board. And it's interesting, when you look at our top five export markets, it's what people would think. It's Canada, Mexico, China, South Korea, and Japan. But when you talk to other the people like Wisconsin Cheesemakers, example, they are excited about the Middle East. They're excited about India. They're excited about the micro-Asias, like the Vietnams of the world. So we don't do a very good job as a state in the past of promoting our agricultural exports. And that's why DATCAP has been fantastic to work with. They hired a few years ago a young man from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and I hope your listeners understand the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation focused a lot on the manufacturing side of the house and exports those. And using DATCAP and WEDIC expertise, now we're going to focus on exporting those ag commodities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Representative Tony Kurtz, State Representative for the 50th Assembly District. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Representative Kurtz, before we move on to the next topic, if dairy farmers are just trying to stay solvent, they're trying to stay in business, how can they focus on expanding into new markets globally? That takes a whole lot of energy and focus.
Well, and that's why DADCAP and WEDIC, you know, they're going to work with farmers. They're going to work with those processors to walk them through the process, because we do have a lot of people that are already exporting to other countries, especially when you talk about cheese. And, you know, I have Car Valley Cheese in my district, and they're doing exports. But when you talk about especially some of our smaller farms and those specialty products, you know, they may, you know, a country is just not going to take a package here and a package there. That's where WEDIC and DADCAP are going to work with those producers to walk them through. And maybe, a matter of fact, those smaller producers will work with DADCAP, and they'll bundle with other smaller producers to have, you know, like a pallet or a big thing to go ship overseas. So those are the type of things that DADCAP's going to leverage. The other thing is get them in those other countries. Unfortunately, with COVID, you know, a lot of, obviously, international travel has stopped, and then I'm more optimistic in the spring when those trade shows will start opening to travel and that person-to-person contact. And so, you know, they'll take those producers overseas with them, DADCAP and WEDIC, when they take those missions overseas. And I think the big thing is get their foot in the door, start that relationship, and I think that's what DADCAP and WEDIC are going to leverage with our producers.
Staying along the lines here of agriculture and the work on Joint Finance Committee, Joint Finance Committee had an executive session last month. Ag Department requested hundreds of thousands of dollars for grants to meat processing facilities to promote meat industry growth in Wisconsin. What is happening there?
And that was approved. That was, once again, you talked about the state budget earlier. That was something that was in the state budget. And it's interesting, and unfortunately with the pandemic, one of the things that did come out of the pandemic, a lot of consumers are shopping closer to home. And so for my district, obviously in Richland Center, I have the Richland Meat Locker. They saw their sales expand during the pandemic. And then up in Mauston, I have Wisconsin River Meats. It's the same thing. Their sales over the pandemic expanded, and I think that's where consumers were shopping closer to home. So how does that affect the meat inspectors? Well, your listeners may or may not know, anytime those, you know, Wisconsin River Meats or Richland Meat Locker, anytime they process meat, they have to have an inspector there. And so we need more inspectors in the state. It's interesting, a lot of our meat processing facilities, these small family-owned places are expanding, like the one Wisconsin River Meats expanding with a $3 million addition, which Richland Meat Locker, they're going to expand here soon. So it bodes well for our smaller communities and our small family-owned businesses, but we have to have meat inspectors so they can go out and do that very crucial inspection.
This is at a time as well when the price of certain types of meat is just through the roof. We also see pressures with fake meat making a run at animal meat. What are producers saying?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Well, what they're saying is we'd sure like to see that increase come through to the farmer, and I would too. You know, this morning I was listening to a story where they're talking about inflation, you know, meat and beef, things like up anywhere from 10 to 12%, dairy prices up 11%. Well, I would submit to you, unfortunately, I don't think that 11% or 12% is getting back to the farmer. Hmm. And that's why, you know, we talk about value added. I will say this, you know, during the course of the pandemic, I visited, you know, Richland Meat Locker and Richland Center quite a bit because I like to shop there. And I guess I look at the price of bacon. You know, bacon last year at that place was, you know, it was at a set price. It was like $7 a pound. And I know that's expensive for a lot of consumers. But if you go down there today, that bacon's that same price. Mm-hmm. So our local producers haven't increased those costs as much as I've seen in some of the bigger stores.
We're discussing legislation with Republican Representative Tony Kurtz of Waniwak on the line. What do you want to convey to the state lawmaker about where pandemic relief is either missing the mark or what's been extremely beneficial? What do you think about the Assembly's new political district maps? Should it fall to the courts to decide redistricting? What are pressing issues in southwestern Wisconsin? Join in 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap in a minute. here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Republican Representative Tony Kurtz of Waniwak, an organic farmer in Juneau County, on the line. Turning to redistricting, Republicans in the Assembly passed their political district maps Thursday, all Republicans voting in favor. The Republican-controlled Senate approved the maps a week ago. It sets the stage for Governor Evers, who has reiterated he will veto the maps. How do you feel about letting the courts decide? 800-642-1234. Representative Kurtz with us for nine more minutes. So looking at redistricting, Assembly Republicans passed their versions of the maps. And how do you feel about the courts then perhaps deciding where the maps, what the future of these maps should be?
Well, unfortunately, you know, the governor has already indicated that he's going to veto this. And that's unfortunate. I wish he'd actually look at this and consider that. It's not the first time the courts have weighed in. You know, they did that also back in 2001. So we'll just see. You know, it's interesting. You talked earlier about myself sitting on the Joint Finance Committee. A lot of people thought that the governor was going to veto the state budget this year. He did not veto the state budget. He actually signed the state budget. And, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it's going to go to his desk, and we'll see if he does the redistricting maps or not.
So you find that there could be some opening here, that there could be more back and forth?
I would certainly hope he would consider looking at the maps. And I do want to talk about if people didn't get a chance to look on Thursday, so they can watch Wisconsin Eye, and they can watch the entire floor session. We actually took up the maps from the People's Map Commission. And I will be very honest with you. I was shocked at the number of Assembly Democrats that voted against the maps from the People's Map Commission. As a matter of fact, there was two representatives, Representative Sylvia Ortiz-Velez from Milwaukee, that spoke for at least 20 minutes about the inequities in the People's Map Commission. And in addition, you had Representative Lakeisha Myers, who also spoke. So I know some of your listeners, because I know I didn't hear that when I watched my 10 o'clock news. And so I would encourage people to watch the floor debate. You can see that on Wisconsin Eye. It was this past Thursday, Veterans Day, on the 11th. And they can go to wisconsineye.org.
So why,
they can actually see that.
Why do you think Democrats are not on the same page with these maps?
I just think the way the People's Map Commission, some of the things that happened, particularly in the Milwaukee area, they were what, and I would think, like I said, encourage people to listen to Representative Ortiz-Velez, because she was very articulate about how she felt that they were not representing minority voters in those areas. And so it was very interesting. I was sitting there, I'll be honest, I was like, wow, you don't see this very often. And so, you know, we will see where the process goes. The governor, I'm hopeful he'll give it serious consideration. But that's where we're at right now. And I do want your listener to understand, it's our constitutional obligation as the legislature to come up with the redistricting maps. We do this every 10 years. That is our constitutional responsibility per the Constitution.
Let me just reintroduce you here. We have Tony Kurtz, State Representative for the 50th Assembly District, talking about legislation and the work inside the Capitol. With your thoughts and questions, 800-642-1234. Let's move on to the term bagging, and this is something in the pharmaceutical industry. You propose legislation that would end the use of white bagging, which allows insurers to require medications be bought from certain specialty pharmacies. And this legislation has been dubbed as Corrine's Law. Can you tell us about it?
So Corrine is a young lady from the Eau Claire area. And she was 8 months pregnant. And unfortunately, in one of her checkups, she was diagnosed with an advanced case of breast cancer, a very aggressive form. And so she had to, they delivered the baby early, right at the 8-month mark. The wonderful baby boy was born. But six days after her delivery, she started chemotherapy to stop, obviously, this horrible breast cancer. And so in the course of her treatment, her insurance company basically told her hospital that she was going to have her chemo at a different location because her hospital wasn't allowing what they call white bagging. And basically what white bagging is, and it's relatively new, it's about 18 to 24 months when this really started happening. In an attempt to save money, insurance companies are trying to bypass the hospital pharmacy. So, for instance, in Corrine's case, she needed a very expensive chemotherapy drug and then some of these immune therapy drugs. And normally, those are mixed right there in the hospital and then given to the patient. Well, what insurance companies are doing now to save a little money, they will have those drugs mixed in a specialty pharmacy, and a lot of times these specialty pharmacies aren't even in our state, and then they will mail those to the hospital, and then the hospital will use that that drug that was mailed and then give to the patient. Well, Corrine's insurance company was saying this is what we're going to do. Her hospital is saying we do not allow white bagging, so Corrine was going to have to go to a whole different provider, and she didn't want to do that, basically, because you know, you got to think you're going through this stressful time of advanced breast cancer. You have that relationship with that doctor.
You're not
going
to switch providers in that situation.
And so that's where the essence of the law is. We in the state, this is something that is we need to stop because in the case of Corrine's case, it affected her care. And in the case of a young lady in my district, her name's Christine, she has psoriatic arthritis. And same thing happened to her. She was told she got her treatment initially in Reedsburg, and then her insurance company said, well, we're going to start mailing you the treatment. Well, when they mailed those, you know, I imagine a lot of your viewers know the mail. Unfortunately, delivery delays, it didn't arrive on time. And so many cases with Christine, her medication did not arrive on time.
And that would certainly, you know, mess up the treatment schedule. Just some pushback here. A report from the National Association of Boards of Pharmacies said brown bagging and white bagging models, they reduce physicians' costs associated with buying and stocking these really expensive meds and limit the lengthy administrative process of billing payers for reimbursements. What about that? Those upsides?
Kate, that is just their lobbyist talk right there. Because let's think about this for a second. They're going to mail. So in case of Corrine's place, they mailed this drug to the pharmacy. That pharmacy now has to take that drug. And the other thing, when they talk about cost, especially with somebody that is going through cancer treatment, with that cancer treatment, you can go in one day, and that doctor is going to write what you're going to mix, what the mixture is going to be. And then you come in maybe a week later for the actual chemo. Between that week time, a patient's condition can change. And you have to think. So a week earlier, the doc's writing that chemotherapy, the medication that's going to be used, based on the condition of that patient that day. The patient comes in a week later. They do vitals. They do blood draws, all that stuff. They look at the patients, especially with cancer patients, unfortunately, their conditions can change. And so that medication that was mailed from this specialty pharmacy is based on the condition of that patient a week before. So when that happens, and that does happen, where the condition of that patient changes, they cannot give that drug that was mailed because, once again, that was based on the condition of that patient a week before.
So you're saying there is drug waste here.
Exactly, Kate, exactly. And so that's what the industry, when you really think about it, there's studies, so I can give you studies. There's studies where it's saying there's almost $300 million in waste with these drugs. And these are life-saving, high-cost drugs that once it's mixed for that patient and it changes, they can't reuse that drug. That drug gets destroyed, incinerated. So, you know, we can go back and forth on this data, but this is we're going up against, let's be honest, we're going up against big insurance companies, okay? And there's a lot of money at stake, but at the end of the day, who suffers is patients like Corrine and Christine and all these other people that are not getting their medication in a timely manner. That's the bottom line with Corrine's law.
Do you know what the prevalence of these bagging practices is in Wisconsin, how widespread?
Well, and that's something that we're getting data. So like I mentioned earlier, it's about this is relatively new. It's only really been starting about the 18 to 24 months. And so that's something that we're working on right now to see how much, how prevalent is this? And because that's a great point you bring up, you know, how much is this happening? The fact of the matter is, I know the more I talk about this with people, I talked to a friend of mine the other night on the phone. He lives up in Shell Lake. He had this happen to him. So the more and more people find out about it, it's like, wait a minute, I had this happen, or I had a loved one this happened to. So more and more is going to come out. And just to your listeners, this is a bipartisan bill. There's 99 members in the assembly. We have 59 co-sponsors on this piece of legislation.
We'll be watching it. Representative Kurtz, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate, and thanks for all your listeners.
Representative Tony Kurtz represents the 50th District in the Assembly. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with the CEO of the International Crane Foundation as we talk about legislation that would open the door to sandhill crane hunting. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.